Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Ewan Spence here once more, and it's your All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. Thank you for continuing to listen. If this is the first time you've stumbled across the podcast, then congratulations. You're in for a half hour where we talk about what's been up with Windows Phone, the ecosystem, and all the other things that impact on that in the last 7 days. Thankfully, it's not just me rabbiting on for 30 minutes. Why would we want somebody that goes on hours and hours on end with factual information when we have Rafe Blanford?
Hello, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Rafe, of course, currently on duty as a super sysadmin with the server on All About Windows Phone. We also, in terms of super Linuxy person, we have David Gilson as well.
Hello, Ewan. The ironic thing is I haven't been in a Linux box for quite a while because I'm busy working on All About Windows Phone.
Woohoo. Yeah, and you've made the switch over to Windows 8 as well, as we talked about previously. Is it still going okay?
It's going fine, actually. I've got some Twitter apps running in the background, which are completely plaguing me with notifications, but I've just been able to hover my cursor over the charm bar, go into settings, and click disable notifications for an hour while we record this podcast.
Excellent. I mean, to me, that just sounds like the third chapter in the second Harry Potter novel, but there we go. Hover over the charms bar, Harry. There we go. What's going on? Obviously, Windows 8, Windows 4.8 is all coming on, but software continues to be updated. Rafe, the Tango rollout is going on just now. Now, this was meant to be for low-end devices, but it's actually available for everybody because it does quite a bit to the Windows Phone system, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, I wouldn't say it's a big update, and there has been some confusion about this. You know, people refer to it as Tango. That's actually the code name. I think internally it's kind of the official name is Windows Phone 7.5 refresh, although it's really just an updated version of Windows Phone 7.5. I think perhaps Microsoft could have cleared up the naming a little bit. And actually the main aim of this update in terms of the platform was to enable Windows Phone to run on lower specification devices like the Lumia 610. And so people often talk about Tango devices, and that's the Lumia 610 they mean, and others. That's actually a little bit inaccurate because Tango is the name for the whole of a software update, which does, as you say, include a few other bits. I mean, for example, we've got some advances to MMS editing. You can actually attach multiple items. There are a few other very small items, but for the most part, it's really about performance and stability. And so, as you say, this is now available rolling out to some of the kind of the first and second generation devices, you know, existing ones that are already out there that have Mango at the moment, they're now rolling out to Tango. I think for most people you're not really going to notice a difference when you update this, but as with all software updates, it's kind of it's worthwhile doing because it does, you know, fix a few bug holes. I mean, Ewan, I know you've updated. Have you actually seen noticed any of the updates that have been in Tango?
To be honest, no, and I think that's a good thing. Obviously, it's doing a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. It's getting things ready. For example, if you've some of these phones, you need to have this update for the new Nokia applications that are going to be coming out over the next couple of months. So it's sort of you know, back-end pipes and banging on those. I think the great thing is okay, yes, you do have to still hook it up into your PC or your Mac, and it takes time, and we don't have over the air yet. But It worked straight off. It was one click and it was done, and everything was back in the phone. Though you didn't have to reset anything or redo your icons or your lifestyles or such like that. And I also love the fact that it is going out to some of the really early phones, things like the Dell Venue, things like the Omnia. They're picking this up as well. So when you hear Microsoft saying, we're going to support phones for 18 months after release when Windows Phone 8 comes out, they're still walking that walk from some of the very first hardware iterations that we had coming out for Windows Phone, you know, 15, 16 months ago, and I really liked that.
Yeah, and it's probably worth pointing out here that although the platform update is relatively small, there are some bits in here which will be of interest to specific device owners. Now, for example, pretty much all the Nokia devices, with the exception of the Lumia 610 and the Lumia 900, which are effectively already running this, get some notable feature additions with this update. Naturally, it's they're rolling in several updates into one. But for example, you get internet sharing. That means you can turn your phone into a Wi-Fi hotspot and then use its 3G connection to connect other devices. That might be an iPad or, you know, any other computer device. I guess a lot of people will be using it with a laptop or a PC. You also get a flip to silent mode. So basically, when a call comes in, you can turn the device over and that will silence the call. So there are some other bits and pieces in here. You just have to be slightly careful when you're, if you like, distinguishing between those bits which are kind of already in the platform, which are enabled by some device updates as well, and what's actually, you know, a platform update. I mean, as I said, it's the MMS, and then there's some exporting and importing contacts from a phone, and there's some other very minor improvements. But overall, as you say, it's a good thing to have.
Sorry, I thought that sounded like it just the line went dead. Okay, right then.
Do you want to go to me on how to check for updates?
Yes, let's do that then. Yeah. David, you just want to jump in on that one then.
Okay. Yes, and if you want to check for updates, just make sure you go into the settings application on your phone, scroll down to phone update, and then just make sure that both the boxes are ticked for notify when updates are found, and to even do it on your mobile data connection. And then you will have to do it through Zune Desktop because we don't have over-the-air firmware updates yet.
Now, that's coming from Windows Phone 8, but also do note that you can also, next time you connect your phone up to Zune Desktop, you can go into settings, phone, and then press the check for software updates button from inside the settings. So that's a way to force a check as well. Now, David, you've got the return of, well, an application that many people loved. We lost it just before Christmas, but it's back again, isn't it?
Yes, that's MetroTube from Lazy Worm Applications. This was a favourite YouTube application. It's very well presented. As you flick through, it presents all the content from things that YouTube curates and your own subscriptions. It doesn't have some of the power user features that more recent applications have got, say like downloading videos, but it looks great. But now it has been released as free, because the reason it was withdrawn in the first place is because they wanted to provide high quality streams from YouTube, but YouTube do not really document how to access that. So they were having to use various hacks and workarounds to do it. And anytime YouTube changed their internal system, they had to try and keep up. And they decided to pull the application originally because they just thought that was not a good enough user experience. They've since given up on YouTube giving any formal access to the high quality streams, but seeing as they do have an application that works, we thought they will just give it to the community as an example of how a YouTube application can be, and maybe something that will get YouTube thinking about, well, we need to do better for our non-Android clients.
And it's important to point out here that, you know, this isn't something that's restricted to Metro app, but they did the option to stand back, and now they're going forward to try and do it again. It never went away if you still had it on your handset. You know, I've had Metro app now all the time with the 800, hoping that I would never have to do a hard reset or switch handsets. So when I picked up another handset, for example, I couldn't reinstall Metro app because it was locked out. So I think this is a smart move. And it's also smart that they've released it as freeware as well. I don't see them making any sort of headway against YouTube, because YouTube is part of Google and Google has the moat, and they want to keep everybody there for advertising revenue, and they can't really do that with Microsoft because everything defaults back to Bing. At least in iOS, there is some search revenue coming into Google from there. And also, of course, Metro's not the only one as well. Rafe, you've been playing around with PrimeTube, if I recall.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's just worth mentioning there are quite a lot of these YouTube applications out there. I mean, MetroTube was fairly unique early on in that it was one of the best implemented of the YouTube clients. But another one that people might like to check out is PrimeTube, which I think I wrote about at the beginning of June, and it has recently been updated to version 2. That does include some support for sort of high quality streams. It also allows you to upload videos to YouTube, although as with all the other applications, you're kind of limited to videos that you record within the application. That's down to the limitations of the platform API. It's a bit of a pain because really most people aren't going to do that. They're going to grab a video with the camera application and want to upload that, but currently that's not possible. I'm pretty sure that's going to change in Windows Phone 8. But one of the things that kind of stood out for PrimeTube, and it's much like MetroTube in this respect, is, you know, a lot of effort has gone into making the kind of the user experience, the Metro UI, look really nice. It's easy to use. And although, you know, you can recognize the elements of YouTube, so it's that sense of familiarity, it has been done with a high degree of faith towards the kind of the principles of the Metro UI. And that just makes it an easy to use application. I'd say this about all Windows Phone apps, really. You know, the more you can sort of build on the principles of Metro UI, you don't have to necessarily slavishly follow them. I think you then will generate a lot more enthusiasm and a lot more use from your users. And so something for developers to consider, perhaps. And I know talking to, you know, people out there, and we've had this comments on our own app, and of course, coming for comments on reviews we've written, you know, kind of the metroness of an app is one of the key characteristics that makes people like it. And so both these apps stand out from that point of view.
You've just reminded me of another application for which there was a similar situation. And it's, and as you were saying, you were like hoping that you didn't have to reset your phone so you could keep MetroTube going. And Pinsation is another one for the Pinterest service, and which I have on my Lumia, and that's been pulled for a very similar reason, because Pinterest don't have an API. Now, just for the sake of arguing with myself, when I first heard about all of this situation with high-quality streams from YouTube, I thought, well, this is something of a storm in a teacup, really, because Windows Phone 7 devices don't have a high-definition screen anyway. So, I mean, as long as we can get a 480p stream, we're fine. The problem comes in when we actually get high-definition screens in Windows Phone 8 devices. However, I think this really speaks to a wider issue of data open data and data portability, because if everyone at home is wondering, well, what's the big deal? Why can't people do this? Well, we have the... If you have a cloud service, you create something called an API, or at least you should. You really should. An API stands for Application Programming Interface, and it gives a standardized way for other programmers to read and write data into your service. And that's what was missing for the high-quality streams in YouTube, and it's what's missing with Pinterest, which is why anyone who is writing applications that accesses such things are having to basically guess and reverse engineer how to get into that system, and because it's undocumented programming information, that could change at any time.
Yeah, it's a good point, David. I mean, of course, some companies will actually take a business decision not to have a API that's completely open, because obviously the stuff on their service is often the bit that's valuable. A good example of this is Instagram, which is why we haven't seen an Instagram app that allows uploading. It's just the API just allows you to kind of consume the streams of photos coming from Instagram. And I suspect, you know, Pinterest have taken a similar view here. And effectively, it's what YouTube have done. You know, they've said, we're not going to make this available publicly. I suspect this may change in the future. We'll have to wait and see. But of course, you know, Google and any of their services are, you know, free to, you know, let it out in the open, let anyone consume it or not. And of course, the problem with these kind of services is once you make it freely available as an API, it can limit the way you can monetize a service. I mean, effectively, it then comes down to you need to charge people a subscription to get access to certain features. You know, it's kind of the issue that Twitter's facing in one sense. They have effectively a completely open API, which is why you see so many third-party Twitter applications. But the way they can monetize it is maybe by putting ads into the Twitter stream of varying degrees of popularity when that happens. So you can see why this is a hot topic, I think, for any of these web services. And I'm sure we're going to see more of this as, you know, the idea of consuming web services becomes more and more popular. I think we've said in the past, you know, this idea of cloud-enabled phones, which basically have completely seamless access to, you know, apps and services that run online, this is going to be more of an issue in the future, particularly, I think, for Windows Phone, which sometimes will be treated as kind of a minority platform, and therefore you won't see the developers, you know, creating an application for it. I think the perfect example of this is Twitter, which only very recently got a big update, you know, the native Twitter application, you know, we've kind of relied any power user on a third party application. So yes, it's an interesting topic, this, but you know, I think thumbs up to the MetroTube guys for actually persevering and sort of making this available so that anyone who does want to use, you know, their version of accessing YouTube is able to do so now.
So the API adventures will continue. And of course, as well as third-party applications, you have first-party applications as well. And in the last week, there has been a little bit of a flood, not just in the United Kingdom, Wimbledon at Silverstone, but also in the app world, as we have the official clients from Facebook, Kindle, WordPress, and Twitter, all updating themselves as well, giving them, some of them specifically, even more functionality. Twitter, for example, has now picked up push alerts, which actually makes the official Twitter application really useful. I have it set up so whenever anybody does an at message at me or does a DM to me, I'll actually get an alert in the toaster bar in the same way that I would get for an SMS or an alarm popping up on the screen that allows me just to do that, see what's happening straight away. And we don't have Steve on here because this is one of his things about multitasking. Says, you know, you get the pop-up on the live tile after the 30-minute check. But now this comes in as an actual push alert system, and it uses Microsoft's own push stack as well. WordPress, the client, again, it's been updated. Mostly it's a bug fix to make sure that you can still read your statistics if using WordPress.com stats handling. Facebook, again, a couple of back-end changes and permissions and stuff, but it's nice to see that that's happening, a constant iteration. It's only been 4 weeks since the last bug fix update on that one. See, we have to remember, these are really big, complicated applications. You know, getting into the Facebook service and just getting in just enough information on the phone still makes it wonderful. And finally, you know, Rafe, I know that you're one of the ebook fans as well. The Kindle application finally gets an update. It's only like the second time. It's not a huge update, but it does mean that we can pin books onto the live tile, and there's all of this. They finally added Mango fast app switching support into the application as well. And these applications, Rafe, they are the bread and butter now. When we talk about ecosystems and app economies, having official clients from the big web services is very, very important to Windows Phone, isn't it?
It is, because basically these are going to be the first things that a lot of people search for on the platform. And I think, you know, Twitter and Kindle are both great examples. You know, they were there, but they were a bit out of date, especially when you compare them to the functionality available on other platforms. And so, you know, Twitter starting to use, you know, the official push notification framework, that's great news for Windows, because, of course, you know, people who download and saw that Twitter client will go, ah, look, you know, it's working as it should. I'm getting good notifications. And frankly, I don't think notifications on Windows Phone are necessarily as strong as the other platforms. But for most people, that's probably going to be, you know, good enough, especially those kind of toast notifications. You kind of get that instant, you know, at and DM alerts. And again, you know, for the Kindle application, I mean, this is obviously an application that you are going to be likely to switch in and out of. You know, you'll be reading a book and then you might go away and do something, like read some email, send a quick text message, something like that, and want to switch back to it. So having kind of the Mango compatibility, that means the fast app switching, it means, you know, you can go back to it, it will resume where you left it off much more quickly than before, rather than having to wait for it to reload and everything else. And so these kind of updates, you know, are really, really important to kind of the, you know, basic hygiene of the platform, because it demonstrates that at least, you know, some of these big name apps consider it's worth updating. You know, perhaps it's a reflection of the fact there are now more Windows Phone devices out there, but also it's good news because when people do download these apps, they will kind of get a better class of app experience. And, you know, when you're making a direct comparison, you go, how's the Kindle app or how's the WordPress app? You know, that's going to be important. So I think these updates, and, you know, Facebook's the same thing. It's had a whole bunch of updates. So it's now very close to the experience you get on other platforms, and it's with the Metro UI as well. So in some ways, I think it's, you know, even easier to consume Facebook on the Windows Phone device than it is elsewhere. It's an interesting one as well, because both Facebook and Twitter, these are kind of standalone apps that are on top of the functionality built into the platform. Some people are fairly critical of this approach, saying, you know, it doesn't support it very well built in. Well, yes, that's a fair comment, but I actually think providing the basic level of support, which is probably going to keep most people happy, you know, the ability to keep an eye on your status updates of you and your friends built in, that's fine. If you're looking for something more, you install the app. And of course, when they go into the marketplace, they're going to search for the, you know, name of the service, the name of the official app, and that's the first thing they're going to go after. You know, power users might know about third-party clients and all of that, but I think, you know, if you're thinking about the 80% of people, that's why these kind of app updates for these core third-party apps are so important.
And of course, it still leaves a space for third-party applications to come up as well. There's a number of Twitter clients specifically that have popped up that I know David is going to be looking at over the next couple of weeks back on the website. And we'll keep an eye on all of them. If you yourself recording one, do feel free to get in touch. Let us know that you've done some recording of the application. www.allaboutwindowsphone.com or Rafe, shall we just get them to email you directly, or do we have a I want to be on the site at allaboutwindowsphone.com email set up yet?
Not yet, but they can email me direct at rafe@allaboutwindowsphone.com or use the contact form or any of the other contact versions that are sitting on the bottom of every page of the website.
Okay. One other update that I did want to highlight up. It's from the Xbox Live game Chickens Can't Fly. Rafe, I know this game's one of your personal favourites. I love the fact that they've rebalanced the game. They added whole new levels. They, literally, this just wasn't just a bug fix to this Xbox Live title. This was adding in new sections. This was taking back all the feedback they've got and making the game an even better game. Can I just say congratulations on that? That's what I like to see. I like to see the iterative update of the game. For me, when I looked at it first, the game wasn't quite right. Go back to it now, it's certainly improved a bit more. And Rafe, you've been playing this through not just its Xbox Live iterations, but the previous iterations when it was an indie title as well, haven't you?
I have, and I just like the kind of the humour in this title. So, you know, any update on a game I play regularly, I'm always going to be happy to see.
Yeah. Speaking of updates, Rafe, let's put the big scary hat on. Nokia have done some big updates to Nokia Maps and Nokia Drive, and also, it's not just for Lumias now, I'm understanding.
That's right. I mean, the reason I wanted to talk about this story was there are a couple of updates coming. Nokia Maps has already been delivered. Nokia Drive is on the way. That's going to be Nokia Drive 3.0, which is going to add in some extra features. We'll actually cover those in detail once they're available. But this was kind of tied in with the Windows Phone 8 news, and we've kind of since had a bit of follow-up on this, and Nokia came out with a clear statement. And, it, you know, we heard part of Windows Phone 8 was that Nokia's mapping platform would be integrated or would be part of the platform. It wasn't quite clear exactly what that meant. But actually, we now know that Nokia Drive, and I think we can read Nokia Maps into that as well, will actually be available for all Windows Phone devices. So that's, you know, a first-class satellite navigation system is going to be available for every single Windows Phone device. It does raise a rather interesting question, though, doesn't it, Ewan?
What question would that be? Would it be the, do you want a Samsung phone that has the word Nokia on it by any chance?
Well, it is that. And there is a question about whether the other manufacturers will go, will I accept an application called Nokia on my Windows Phone smartphone? But I mean, I think the main question people are asking here is, why on earth would Nokia choose to do this? You know, this is kind of one of their crown jewels.
Then. Would that question be, why are Nokia doing this? Are they mad? This is one of their crown jewels. Like that, yeah?
Yeah, thank you, Ewan. That's exactly the question I was trying to prompt. Because, of course, Nokia Drive is kind of one of the things that differentiates the Nokia devices from all the other Windows Phone devices out there. And I would say it's probably one of the strongest applications together, perhaps with Nokia Music as well, particularly if you've got access to the mixed radio functionality instantly that's now available in India, I understand. But yes, Nokia Drive. So why have they done it? Well, this is really about the kind of the future of mapping in general. And Nokia is betting that by giving up the exclusivity to Nokia Drive, it's going to be able to sort of more thoroughly integrate the Nokia mapping platform onto Windows Phone. And I suspect this was the price they had to pay to Microsoft, if you like, to become the default mapping solution, not just sort of the underlying data, which they kind of already are, but the whole framework that sits within the platform. And they want to do this because they see real value in location as a platform and the idea that you're going to put stuff on top of Maps, and they've referred to this in the past as apps on Maps. But the way to think about this in Windows Phone terms is, you know, when you're using a Windows Phone device and you're using a third-party application or indeed some of the platform functionality, there's very often links into directions or show a map. And if it's using the Nokia mapping solution, obviously it's going to default to those. But it also means that Nokia will be able to build kind of additional apps. So think about something like City Lens that will be able to take advantage of that functionality and have much deeper integration. And so although, yes, all Windows Phone devices will get Nokia Drive, Nokia devices will get additional applications, of which CityLens is one example, and I think there'll probably be more to come. Maybe Nokia Public Transport is another example, which will feel fully integrated with the platform in a way that they don't at the moment. I mean, if you use them at the moment, just every now and then you kind of get this slight disconnect between having both Bing Maps and Nokia Maps on there, and it can be a bit confusing, you know, why are there two mapping solutions? So I think Nokia will be able to create kind of a seamless mapping experience. But that's only kind of one half of the story. The other half of this is that Nokia are looking to build effectively a location and mapping platform across all devices, all services. They kind of want to become a platform for maps and location. They refer to this as their Nokia Wear platform. It's actually used in 90% of navigation systems in cars, for example. It's obviously used on their other devices, Series 40 and Symbian. It's used on a whole variety of websites. Bing is actually, as I said, based on the Nokia Wear platform, but Facebook is going to be using it, Yahoo's using it, and I think we can expect to see that spread a lot more. And the reason that Nokia, you know, is effectively giving up this exclusivity on Nokia Drive is to help drive the growth of Nokia Wear, because it, you know, creates effectively a solution on Windows Phone, which is entirely dependent on Nokia Wear. And that has implications for the apps that might be built on top of it, and they can then be transferred outside of Windows Phone possibly. So I've written an article on this on the site. I won't go into too much more detail here, but I do think it's quite interesting from a strategy point of view that Nokia have effectively, you know, decided to give up what I think many people would regard as one of their greatest short-term advantages or differentiation, because they're playing a longer-term game in terms of they want to be the ones that, you know, have control over the kind of the underlying bits of the location platform generally. And I think you can probably start thinking of the location platform that will run across multiple devices. It won't just be on mobile, it'll be on tablets, it'll be on desktops, it'll be in cars, it will be in appliances. And Nokia will be the ones that kind of own that underlying platform, it just in the same way that Microsoft own the operating system on PCs and obviously on Windows Phone as well. And I think Nokia kind of betting that there's quite a lot of potential for revenue there, maybe location advertising, but also apps will get built on top of that. And although it's quite hard to see this at the moment, it's not hard to foresee a time when, you know, you have a location app, and actually an awful lot of them are going to have location in them. Anything that connects the digital with the physical world will probably have a location element in it that relies on Nokia technology that runs across a whole spectrum of devices and services. So if people are wondering why Nokia are sort of giving up their crown jewel in terms of exclusive apps, that's probably the explanation.
It's another short-term trade for a medium to long-term play from Nokia. They're making a lot of these, aren't they?
They are. I mean, at the moment, I think the news for Nokia has only been bad in terms of results and financial results and sales. But a lot of what they're doing is still thinking long term. And, you know, I think the same can be said of the switch to Windows Phone. You know, a lot of people are being very critical of it at the moment, saying they should have chosen Android. I sort of maintain the stance that, you know, it's actually too early to tell. I do think the transition has been a lot more severe and it's been a lot rougher than they were expecting. But until, you know, Windows Phone 8 has been out, and probably been out for a while, you can't really make a judgment call on this yet. And it always was, you know, their switch to kind of support Microsoft's ecosystem, or rather to become a mainstream partner in that ecosystem, was a strategy that was looking, you know, many years ahead. You know, it was in the short term, probably it would have been better to join Android. They'd have been able to get devices out quickly, probably wouldn't have faced so much criticism. But in terms of the longer term strategy, I'm not sure that would have been sustainable in the same way that it will be if the Windows Phone strategy comes off. And there is an if there, I'd, you know, stress that. But it's also visible in some of the things they're doing in terms of their, you know, device strategy, also their patent portfolio and various other elements of the business. And that's the way companies should operate, frankly. But it probably does create more short-term problems for them.
Yes, well, we'll see how that all plays out. We'll keep an eye on that on the websites. As always, obviously, it's been a big driving conversation on many of our editorial pieces, not just all about Windows Phone, but all about Symbian as well, allaboutsymbian.com, which also has an Insight podcast. We just lifted the name and lots of contributions as well. Right then, coming up close to the end of the marker for this week's news, of course, you can keep an eye on on flows and articles, reviews, and editorial back on the website. We'll be back next week with another Insight News. But before that, we have our traditional, what have we been using on our phones in the last week? It's all about app economy. So what have been the apps that we're picking up just now? David, do you want to pick on that one? What's been your app of the week?
It's been WhatsApp. This has been available on Windows Phone 7 for a while, although I hadn't used it that much, and I had been led to believe that it didn't support push notifications. But it does, and I've been using it very successfully. And if you don't know what WhatsApp is, it's an alternative to text messaging. It's text messaging across the internet, and you don't have to have an account, as it authenticates you by your phone number, and it will scan your address book for phone numbers and compare that to the phone numbers it has in its central database and let you know which of your friends actually are using WhatsApp, so you can get on a message when we're having to ask them. And it works very nicely. You can send pictures, sound, and locations, as well as text messages. And it's a great little app, and it's got live tile and toast notifications as well. So, and it's free in the Windows Phone marketplace.
There we go. Rafe, yeah, you've given me the name of the of application, and it sounds like the sort of thing that old 1930s Europe could have used.
Well, yes, it's called Annexation. Actually, this is a game kind of at the same school as Tetris. It's a Russian game originally, and essentially you've got a playing area that's divided up into coloured polygons, and you and an opposing player, and it's done with a computer AI, can select a colour. And each colour you select, if you've got an adjoining square to you that's that colour, you take it over, and gradually you sort of take over a bigger and bigger area. And the idea, of course, is to take over more than 50% of the area before the opposing player does. It's been known by, I think, various names down through the years. I think Filler was the original name of this game, but on Windows Phone it's known as Annexation, and it's a freeware download, so you can get it free from the Windows Phone marketplace, and it's a good way to sort of, you know, fill the odd 5 minutes. It's one of these classic games that's been ported to lots and lots of different platforms. It's not, you know, as famous as something like Tetris or Color Lines, but it's still been one of the sort of top downloaded of those original applications. So I can remember playing it back on a old 486, so I was pleased to find it available for Windows Phone.
I'm upset when you go old 486. I remember having to save up for the XT that came before the 386, before the 486. Gosh darn it. For me, it has to be Treasures of Montezuma. This is a classic mix 3 game. We've done a big, not mix 3, a match 3 game. We've done a review back on the website, so you can go into full details there. But essentially what it does is it's taken that sort of Bejeweled style game, and by adding in a little twist, which is you have to collect the jewels that are on top of the stones, and you collect a jewel by making sure that the stone it's in is part of one of those match threes. You've got to collect a certain amount of them in a certain amount of time. Now, it's dead easy when you start off. It's like you've got to get 20 of them in like 4 minutes, but when you have to get up to about 150, 160 of them in 5 minutes, it starts to become frantic, and there's power-ups and there's strategy in here far more than the original Bejeweled game. It's very accessible, great learning curve, and Alloware have done a wonderful job in it. I know they've got a lot of titles over on iOS and Android. I just hope that some of them are going to be ported over as well, because Hotel Mogul, I think, would be wonderful. But if you're listening, Alloware, Mogul Games, yes, let's get them over. But Treasures of Montezuma is one that I'm enjoying just now. You'll find links to all of those applications that we've mentioned back on the page for the podcast on our website, allaboutwindowsphone.com. You'll find us on facebook.com/allaboutwindowsphone and Twitter and Hardpile and all the usual places. It remains for me to say thank you to Rafe Blanford.
Thank you, Ewan, and thanks for listening, everybody.
And thank you to David Gilson.
Thank you, and thank you to everyone at home for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Indeed, yes, thank you to all out there. Your comments are much appreciated, and we shall catch you on the next All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. Ta-ra for now.